We are coming to the closing session, and it will be really a highlight with the presence of the Most Reverend Desmond Tutu, Archbishop Emeritus of South Africa. And I will have the honor to introduce you, Your Grace, but let me also introduce before the members of the panel. And first I would like to greet His Royal Highness, Crown Prince Haakon of Norway, John Brand, the founder, chairman, and chief executive of Operation Hope. That's exactly what we need, by the way, after. And Pekka Himanen, philosopher, Helsinki Institute of Information Technology, Finland. Now, this session is not just a session. It is a celebration of an initiative which is undertaken by our young global leaders and which is really very special, very special. And before introducing His Grace, I would like to ask you, Pekka, just to describe in some words what we are talking about if we speak about the Dignity Initiative, the Global Dignity Initiative.
Well, thank you very much, Klaus. First of all, it's an honor to be in the same panel with Archbishop Tutu. And together with Crown Prince Haakon of Norway and John Hope Bryan from the U.S., we started this Global Dignity Initiative, where the goal is that we cannot just be focused on economic development. We need a larger vision for the world, to what kind of a more dignified world we leave to our children and grandchildren. And for this reason, we have visited schools a lot, Dignity Days, a meeting with children from 12 years to 18 years. We did it also with Archbishop Tutu here in Davos on Friday. I'll just mention one example that summarizes the importance and meaning of dignity. It was once we went, the three of us, to a school to speak about dignity, and they were 12-year-olds. And then one girl said that I also have an example of dignity to tell. And then she said that 2 years earlier, her own grandmother had died. And then she said that for the last days of her grandmother's life, she had been sitting with her mother on her side on the bed, holding her hand and chatting with her. And when I think about this image of a 10-year-old girl sitting next to her dying grandmother, and the last words that the grandmother hears in her life are from her granddaughter, the words, "I love you, Granny." It's very difficult to imagine a stronger image of dignity. And what I was thinking then was the question that if this 12-year-old girl could show so much dignity, how do we show dignity to this 12-year-old girl and other children and other people in general? So the question really for us is that when we tell to our grandchildren one day, what did we do in 2009, what kind of world we were creating then, what did we choose did we choose to create a more dignified world, or did we choose just our own self-interest? So this is really the question that the 12-year-old girl poses to us.
Thank you. That's intergenerational responsibility if our young global leaders think of their grandchildren. But I have now the honor to introduce you, Your Grace. You were actually the first black General Secretary of the South African Council of Churches in 1979. You spoke strongly and internationally for your cause, pushing for non-violent change and economic sanctions against South Africa. In reaction, you were submitted to a number of constraints, and you won, I think we all know, the Nobel Peace Prize in 1984. You were elected the first black Anglican bishop of Johannesburg. And in 1986, you were elected Archbishop of Cape Town, the highest position, I should mention, in the Anglican Church in South Africa. In 1989, you led a march to a whites-only beach where you and your supporters were chased off. And if you imagine, it's only 20 years ago. Only 20 years ago. Your policies, I think, for forgiveness and reconciliation, which you also pursued in your very important and worldwide remarked position as the chairman of South Africa's Truth and Reconciliation Commission to investigate apartheid era crimes. This chairmanship, I think, has become an end, and your point of view and your attitude in general, your commitment has become an international example of conflict resolution and a trusted method of post-conflict reconstruction. Your Grace, we are all here. It's the last session. We have talked about economic issues, about political issues, but at the end, it's a human being which is the center of everything. And I think this is also what your dignity initiative, or our dignity initiative, wants to express, and where His Grace, the Archbishop, I think is the finest example of this commitment to the human being at the center of everything. May I invite His Grace to address us.
Thank you very much, Professor Schwab, and my fellow panelists. I'm a snob, so I will be name-dropping very soon. Well, you know, the other day when I was with the Crown Prince of of Norway, you know, kind of thing. and thank you, all of you distinguished persons. Thank you for your introduction. One of the obvious things about me is I am old. One day they had named a school after me in the Netherlands. That's not the important part of the story. And my wife and I went to the celebrations, and the school was celebrating 400 years of existence. And when we arrived in the village, a little girl came up to me and said, "Were you here when the school started?" Well, I thought I was decrepit, but I hadn't expected that it was quite so obvious. But one of the characteristics of being old is that you tend to be repetitive. You tell the same stories, and you keep getting back to the same old points. Well, yes, And one of my almost obsessions now is reminding us of one lesson that God has seemed to want to teach us. And it is actually a very straightforward lesson that we somehow still seem not to get it. And it is this, that you and I and all of us are actually created for togetherness. You and I are created for family. Well, you know that lovely story at the beginning of the Christian Bible. Adam has been having a great time with the animals, you know. I mean, really great time. And there is, as you know, there is no bloodshed there because everybody is a vegetarian. And you think, no, I mean, it's okay. Adam must be having the time of his life. But God looks on and says, no, not really. It isn't good. Really, it isn't good for man to be alone. And you know then God says, Adam, what about this animal? And Adam says, nope. This one? Not on your life. and God puts him to sleep and produces this delectable creature, Eve. And when Adam awakes and sees Eve, he says, wow. This is just what the doctor ordered. But it is in fact a very profound story. None of us comes fully formed into the world. Yes. I wouldn't know how to walk as a human being. I wouldn't know how to talk as a human being. I wouldn't know how to think. No. I wouldn't know how to be human. I learn how to be all of these things from other human beings. I need other human beings in order for me to be human. And that's the one lesson God has kept trying to teach us. Hey, you belong in this delicate network. And it is a delicate network of interdependence, of complementarity. You see, Adam has gifts that Eve does not have. And Eve has gifts that Adam does not have. And you can almost see God rubbing God's hands and says, aha, aha, that's exactly why I created you. I've created you not for self-sufficiency. Because you see, the totally self-sufficient human being is subhuman. I need you to be all you can be so that I can be me and all that I can be. In our part of the world, we have something called Ubuntu. Is the essence of being human. Ubuntu. I am a person. Ngumuntu. I am a person. And we say a person is a person through other persons. The solitary human being is a contradiction in terms. Now that is the lesson God has kept trying to tell us. Hey, you are meant to live in a delicate network of interdependence, of complementarity. Family. Now you would say, no, that's they go again, these religious people, you know. No. You say, no, that can't be true, really. And then God says, hey, if you are family, be careful how you treat the environment. Don't emit so much carbon. It's going to lead to climate change. What do we do? Those who are powerful, smart, who say when it is hot, well, we'll switch on our air condition. If it's cold, we can keep our rooms warm. But you see, people in other parts of the world haven't got. And then, it affects those people over there. And before we know where we are, we discover we're in the same boat. We have this fragile earth as our home. And when we treat any part of it without compassion, gentleness, caring. You know, God said, I'll create you so that you should have dominion. And people think dominion means, oh, I'm macho and I can do what I like. No. Dominion, because we are created in the image of God, it is a dominion such as God's dominion. A compassionate, a gentle, a caring dominion. And today, climate change is no longer just a theory. It's for real. It must have been Norway, where they told me that some of their winter resorts have been closed because there has not been enough snow. God says, my children, please know that you are my children, that you really belong in one family. Please care for one another. Oh, no. And what do? God says, okay, let's try and knock their heads a little bit. And you get an economic meltdown. And no part of the world is exempt. It's global. Oh, these guys are talking about family. It's all so sentimental, you know. No. It is that family, there is a family ethic. In a family, you don't say, baby, what is your contribution to the family budget? You will get in proportion to what you contribute, or granny. Baby contributes nothing. I mean, sometimes a few bad smells and so forth. But we pour. I mean, prodigal. in our love to a baby who does nothing. In the ethic of family, you say, from each according to their ability, to each according to their need. And you say, ah, well. Now, what's happened in our world? Quickly. How many minutes have I got?
Yeah. As long as you want.
No. What's happened in our world? We have become quite obsessional about competition. Now, that's maybe okay. Sorry, I mean I'm not hitting at anything. I'm just speaking as maybe a religious leader, yes. In our modern culture, we set high store by success. The most awful thing to happen to anybody is to fail. And so we worship in the temple of cutthroat competition. Eh? We must succeed. And so what do? Some cook the books. Because it's like the pressure is so great. So that stomach ulcers become status symbols. I mean, you can see how hard I work. In one of your European countries, you said, at one time there was a time when they said, to be compassionate, to be caring, to be concerned about your neighbor is wet, meaning it is something to be despised. You must be. And so you and I have not seen that it matters at all that we can spend billions on arms. Eh? Billions on arms. When we know that a very small fraction of those budgets would ensure that children everywhere in the world would have clean water to drink, would have enough food to eat, would have a decent home? Would have... Now, as you realize, I know nothing, absolutely nothing about economics. But I've kept wondering, I mean, in a universe such as ours, where you have laws that we call the laws of nature, the laws of causality. How come we seem not ever able to predict how the economy is going to operate? Why? I don't know. It just seems... Might it actually be the case that God is saying, when we keep having these cycles, boom, recession, why are we not able to handle things in such a way that you have a steady growth? Now, this is one, my ultimate point, penultimate point, penultimate point. We have seemed to ask is it profitable? God is saying, we actually ought to have been asking, is it right? Is it right? And you test the rightness. You see, the God we worship is notoriously biased in favor of the weak. When a bunch of slaves is in Egypt and suffering, this God takes the side of the slaves. That story, Adam and Eve, you remember somewhere when God says to the older brother, where is your brother? God is asking us, where is your brother? Where is your sister? And the bias of this God, who has some of the lowest standards actually ever, because anybody can go to heaven. And God actually is concerned that everybody should go to heaven. Anybody. We are going to be surprised, those of us who go to heaven, if we are, at the people we find there whom we had not expected. But even more, we will be surprised at the people we don't find there. But do you remember that this Jesus Christ says, you are not going to be asked, did you pray? Did you go to church? No. Did you give water to the thirsty? Did you clothe the naked? Did you feed the hungry? I want to submit that that is the lesson God is teaching us. My dear children, I love you, all of you, says God, because you are my children. There are no stepchildren. And you who are powerful for the sake of the weak. You are powerful for the sake of the weak. This is, we say, maybe a universe, natural universe, phenomenological laws. When you put your hand on a hot stove, it's going to burn, always. But this is also a moral universe. There's no way in which injustice and oppression will ever have the last word. So when 6 million people are killed, those who are strutting around like invincible cocks of the walk bite the dust. Hitler. That is what we said at home. We used to say, they've got guns, but they've already lost. This is a moral universe. When you fire rockets at civilians, you're going to you're going to pay, you're going to have to account. But equally, when you kill 300 children, and innocent civilians, you are going to be answerable to this God who says, I have created you for family, for togetherness. I have created you so that you are brother and sister. Where is your sister? Where is your brother?
Crown Prince Hakon, would you like to add, comment, ask a question?
Thank you, Professor Schwab. I would just like to thank you for making this happen. Thank you, Archbishop Tutu. I think I speak for everyone when I just say we're so lucky that we're able to listen to you, learn from you. I've been looking at the faces here today, and I think that you really touch our lives in a meaningful way. So I want to thank you for that. I thought I'd tell a story from South Africa. It's not the same one. I was traveling in South Africa with an aid agency, and we were raising money for HIV/AIDS projects. And I went to this township, a very poor area, and I met this girl called Matumbangle. And she invited me into her house, and we sat down. And she was in the last stages of AIDS. You could tell from the way her skin looked and her face, and you could also tell that her energy was quite low. And we started talking, and I asked her, so maybe you could tell me a little bit about yourself. And she told me that she had become HIV positive. And in this area, when they didn't have access to drugs, this was a death sentence. And Matumbangle had all the right in the world to become bitter, to become angry, and maybe even self-destructive. I would definitely have understood that reaction. But Matumbangle made a different choice. She went out and she started talking to her peers about how they could avoid becoming HIV positive. And that's courageous in two ways. First of all, because it's taking up a difficult issue and talking about it. But also there's a lot of stigma attached to being HIV positive. A lot of people are socially excluded if they are open about their status. Matumbangle was. She went out and she talked to her peers about how they could avoid becoming infected, how they could make choices that would protect them. And she also made groups of other people who were HIV positive so that they could discuss and talk about and share and help each other in both that they were infected by this deadly virus, but also how to handle the stigma and how to handle to be discriminated against. And I remember thinking that it's amazing what Matumbangle is able to do. The leadership that she was showing has become a role model for me. And I'm thinking that it's good to have something to reach high. So even though she was my role model, obviously I fail every day. But I think that what she taught me was that it's incredible what you can do. And Matumbangle didn't have much resources. So if Matumbangle can do all this, what can't we then do? with the resources that we have. So thank you again, Archbishop Tutu. Thank you, Pekka. I know you've worked hard as well to make this happen. So.
Thank you, Crown Prince. John, any comment, addition?
Well, what wise man speaks after Desmond Tutu, I don't know, but it struck me that, Klaus, you're probably the most spiritual German engineer I've met. You told the young global leaders in Zermatt in 2005, the 70 countries we were from, you told us that we were global citizens. I don't think I got it back then. I get it now. It was a very spiritual statement. It's sometimes very hard to see your emotions, but I see it in your wife. Hilda is your heart. And I see it in the statement, we're global citizens. I'm not an American. You're not Swiss German. You're not Norwegian. You're my brother from another mother. You're not Finnish. You're not South African. We're global citizens. And what does that mean? Our Archbishop once said, religion is like a knife. You can use the knife to butter bread and feed the poor. Or you can use that knife to cut the arm off on your brother. Same knife. Capitalism and free enterprise is not evil. It's the abuse of capitalism and free enterprise. It's the greed. And it also can be used for good things. It can be used to uplift people. It's helped to bring several hundred million people out of poverty in China and India and other places. Wells Fargo in America used responsible subprime lending to lift poor people out of poverty and turned away from irresponsible subprime lending. So you can do well and do good. But Quincy Jones said it takes 20 years to change a culture. I thought about that. The last 20 years we've made dumb sexy. All around the world, dumbed down is cool and sexy. In the next 20 years, we need to make smart sexy again. We need to make dignity sexy. We need to make being a global citizen sexy. We need to have values and morals and principles sexy. We need to flip the script. If it takes 20 years to change your culture, what have we been doing in the last 20 years? We can create laws and rules, and there'll be regulations in response to this global economic crisis, but there's been greed since the beginning of time. What's going to change is us, the values. What do we believe? Who are we? What do we stand for? Is it about money? Is it about me or is it about we? Last point, which is why I thought going in this classroom, which we did 2 days ago, Archbishop Tutu and us, we went in this classroom and taught this course in dignity, and we thought we were teaching something, but these kids here in Davos taught us, actually. That's the next 20 years. That's the next 20 years. In many ways, we failed. This generation has failed. But rainbows after storms. You cannot have a rainbow without a storm first. What does the next 20 years look like, and what are we teaching? What do we stand for? Last point. So, America, I'm proud of being American, but we've made a lot of mistakes. We've screwed up. Probably our best time was after the Great Depression for 20 years. A lot of social reform, a lot of modernization, a lot of great ideas, the power of the idea. And then the Marshall Plan after World War II. Who are our greatest allies today? Japan and Germany. Who do we rebuild? Japan and Germany. What great economies are there in the world today? Two of them are Japan and Germany. They rebuilt, they repaid their loan, they serve humanity, they're great allies, they're doing well and doing good. That was doing well and doing good. That was good policy, good capitalism, good humanity, and that was probably America's best time. We can do that again. And I think that that's really what my message is today, if I have one, is that we've got to be more than about me. We've got to be about we, and we've got to see it's in our enlightened self-interest to reach out to our brother, as the Archbishop has said. This is not a goody-two-shoes conversation. This is not a we-are-the-world conversation. This is enlightened self-interest. And so I think that that's it. It's the power of the idea. Klaus, you didn't wake up one morning and say, I want to be rich and powerful. You said, I have an idea called the World Economic Forum. When I see you today, you're as excited today about the idea as you were when you started it. You know, Bill Gates didn't wake up and say, I want to be rich and powerful. Steve Jobs, rich and powerful. Branson of Virgin, rich and powerful. He said, I got an idea. I got an idea. The Archbishop said, I have an idea. Oprah Winfrey said, I have an idea. And those ideas, yeah, made them rich and powerful, but that was never their goal. We got to get back to the power of the idea. And the idea is that we are great. And everybody can be great because everybody can serve. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks. Pekka, do you want to add something?
Thank you, first of all, for the really powerful moral message that you gave us today to Archbishop Tutu. I think that when we are talking about creating a more dignified world as a larger goal, kind of not looking only at 2009 and the financial and economic crisis, I picked three challenges, major challenges that we are facing. And I heard Archbishop Tutu also giving a very practical message. First of all, we are facing the climate change. Not answering to that is like stealing from your own children. But it's not only a problem. We can turn this also into an opportunity. We can make this one of the biggest new areas of innovation. Biggest wealth will be created in new energy and environment technology. So are you going to be a pioneer, or are you going to be a follower in this shift, which is absolutely happening? Everyone will have to react to it. Second, there is a global welfare gap. We must not forget that while we are speaking here, 50,000 people die every day for easily preventable causes. Every 3 seconds a child dies while we are talking here. We may have some problems, we think, but we have food, we have something to drink, we have high-class problems. We cannot go through 2009 but at the cost of the poorest in the whole world. We cannot let them down now. For example, the promise that was made already in the 70s, 0.7 of GDP as development aid, cannot be given up now. It's actually as little as to ask that, could you consider of giving 0.7% of your time about caring about others? Is 99.3% enough to think about yourself? And the third theme I pick up is living as a multicultural family in peace. And I had an honor to do some very little work when Archbishop Tutu was leading the Truth and Reconciliation Council, and to see how you really can go over any conflict. There's no conflict that is frozen forever. That's what President Martti Ahtisaari says. And another line he uses, I had a chance to work as his advisor, and he's being a peace negotiator from Namibia to Indonesia, Aceh, Kosovo, in the Middle East. And he said that the goal must be lasting peace with dignity for all. Otherwise, you only have a temporary ceasefire if you don't find a solution that recognizes the dignity of both partners of the conflict. So I think we heard a really practical message from Archbishop Tutu, and I would like to challenge everyone to not only think about dignity, but to take it into action in whatever business or political field or other field of life you are in. We want to operationalize dignity.
I feel it's very encouraging if we see those three young people not speaking only for themselves, but representing a group of 450 young global leaders who are very influenced by this new type of thinking, this moral rearmament which we need in our world. Now, we have talked a lot about the redesign of the systems, of the processes, of leadership during the last 4 days, and we had some attempt to summarize conclusions in the last 2 sessions. So it would be too pretentious for me to add another summary. I just before asking the Archbishop one question with his answer, we will conclude this meeting. I just would like to make one technical point. We all go afterwards up to the mountains for a farewell luncheon. And I would like to thank everybody who has been engaged in making this meeting smooth, efficient, interactive. I would like to mention particularly my colleague Jaul, who was in charge of the program, and the 1,000 or more collaborators to make your life easy here, not to speak, and I cannot disclose the number of all the security people whom we have here and who deserve our special recognition. I would like to add a special word of thanks to the Davos population. We should not forget it's quite an intrusion which we bring into this small community and setting up, let's say, the normal life for a whole week or even longer because with the preparation process. So they deserve a special thank you. And now, Your Grace, we assembled here. You speak to 100 leaders or hundreds of leaders here in this room. You speak to many more via direct television transmission and through the internet. When we look at the world at this moment, and of course you addressed this already in your opening remarks, but if you would give the world advice, and particularly leaders, because we have a special responsibility, and there's always, I'm very much, very often accused, not accused, but sometimes journalists tell me, look, Klaus, you organize a great show in Davos, and you preach people, or you have other people to preach people, and then they go out, and you are a little bit like the reverend in the church on Sunday. And they listen to you, they listen what is said here, and then they do whatever they want to do. What would be your plea Now to this audience who has special responsibilities in the world. And then we will conclude.
Thank you very much. I keep myself being quite amazed at young people and their idealism. They dream God's dream. When young people say, let us make poverty history, they dream God's dream. Because that is what God longs for all of us. Yes, there are many, many awful things in the world. Many, 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 many. But you know something? There are a lot of good things as well. There are a lot of good things. And I'm not trying to rev up your spirits. I'm telling you just what is a truth. We visited Darfur last year. Now all the descriptions that you have heard fall horrendously short of the reality on the ground there. It's one of the most awful, awful, awful places in God's world. And God looking at places such as that, at Gaza, at all of those places, God weeps. But we went to Darfur, and we had a meeting with the so-called internally displaced persons. And I tell a story. And they break out in laughter. Laughter. And the men, Muslim men, talked out in white robes. Spotless. I mean, there is something about being human. There is a resilience in all of us. God didn't make a mistake creating you. Sometimes you might, some of us, look like mistakes, but I mean, none of us is a mistake. You are special. You. Do you know that? That you are special. There isn't anyone else like you. Not even your identical twin. That you are unique. Unique. My wife once sent me on one of my birthdays, my wife sent me a card, which is the least that you can expect from your spouse on your birthday. It had on the outside a wonderful Darby and Joan couple. We have a beautiful and unique relationship, which is very nice. And then I open it inside and it says, I am beautiful and you are certainly unique. But you know, there are beautiful things in Darfur. We met people we hardly ever mention. The humanitarian workers, many, almost all of them come from very well-to-do, comfortable places. And many come back several times over. There are beautiful things. There are beautiful things. And you are part of be able to make something beautiful for God? You. You know, have you watched a symphony? Mm-hmm. Sometimes, you know, you look at the orchestra. The orchestra, they've got those people with big things, the cello, and but sometimes there's somebody at the back there who has nothing but the... and the conductor goes, oh, and the big things go... And now and again he points to the guy at the back, who quite solemnly and seriously... Bing! Well, of course, that symphony would not be as beautiful without that bing. So that not all of us are meant to do things that are spectacular. But each of us can do something to make God's world as God intended it. God intended it so that it was like a garden. And God looks at some of you and at some of the things that you do, and this God who is crying is looking down on Davos. You know? Yeah.
I'm aware. Yeah.
And God, through the tears, smiling. And did you see that little angel who went up to wipe the tear from God's eyes? Because God says, I know you're going to help me realize my dream. And my dream, that my children will know that they belong in one family.